This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to top people and ideas, presented by U-Mobile.
Good morning, I'm Tan Chung Han, and this morning on The Breakfast Grill, we are pleased to have DAP Advisor and Iskandar Puteri MP Lim Kit Siang. Good morning, YB, and welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Now, folks, you can always be part of this conversation. WhatsApp your questions to 018-789-8899. Again, that's 018-789-8899, or you can tweet us at BFM Radio. Now, YB, and if it's okay, I'll call you YB. I know you wanted to be called Kit, but that's a bit too informal for someone okay. So junior.
It'll be fine.
Now, YB, you are one of the longest-serving MPs in Malaysia, right? You won your first parliamentary seat in 1969, Bandar Melaka, I believe. So here you are, almost 50 years later, now part of the ruling coalition. Talk to us about how significant GE14 was for you personally.
I think for the whole generation, it is a dream you never thought we would see in our lifetime. So it was a very significant change, something which under normal circumstances will already be very significant, where we took the first step to become a normal democracy, where there's a change from the incumbent government. But for Malaysia in particular, I think it is extraordinary, because everybody was afraid that of the consequences, the threats of violence, of bloodshed of May 13, and the very fact that we can peacefully and democratically bring about a transition of power, I think is to the credit of all Malaysians.
All Malaysians, and we'll get into perhaps some of the underlying forces that resulted in that win for Pakatan on G14 in just a bit. But then, you know, it was a tremendously challenging road in the lead up to G14, right? I'm talking about the redelineation, the midweek polling day, you know, all these obstacles seemingly in the path of Pakatan. Was there ever a point in time where you thought, you know what, we're not going to make it this time around, we just got to turn our attentions to GE15? How did you keep the hope alive amidst all those challenges?
No, I thought it was a now or never moment. If we don't make it in the 14th GE, the future will be very, very big, because all the rules will be further changed. Already we were up against the most formidable obstacles. We don't have a level playing field. The redenation, the money politics, all the democratic rules. But we have to have game changes. We had to change the rules of the game, and we had game changes. We had Dr. Mahathir leading the Pakatan Harapan. We had the use of a common logo, and the Najib and the Barisan Nasional helped by making a lot of very serious mistakes where they took victory for granted, like the fixing the polling day on a Wednesday, hoping that there would be a very low voter turnout, the open show of disrespect to elders by tearing Dr. Mahathir's pictures. And these things, I think, added to the outrage. And consequently, as a result, on polling day, we see this outpouring of concern. I think what is most significant on this election is that the common feeling that this is the time that we must come forward to save Malaysia. Otherwise, it's a now or never moment. It's a do or die a battle, so to say, for the people of Malaysia.
Now, YB, you say now or never, so you paint it out to be a zero-sum game. Was there a contingency plan of sorts if, you know, GE14 turned out differently? Was that discussed?
There will be no contingency plan.
None.
If the 14G had turned out differently, then of course we must be prepared for even more uphill battle. And I don't see the 15 or 16 GE as likely to bring about any significant change, because the rules of the games will be further altered. And we can see from the revelations of the 1MBG scandal now, the enormity of it. And I'm sure we are going to see a very, very authoritarian, highly undemocratic future.
Now, you've fought the good fight for decades now, right? So, personally, you know, let's get personal here, right? We want to get into the mind of YB Lim Kit Siang here. What kept you going, you know, for all those decades from the 1960s until now? Because 50 years in the opposition trenches, I mean, that's longer than I've been alive, right? So what kept you going?
Well, that we are Malaysians, that we should do something to make Malaysia a better place. And I think that is inherent in most Malaysians. And this election shows that this is not, I mean, in my case, it was a life commitment. But in all Malaysians, everybody wants to see a better Malaysia. It is a part of the Malaysian dream. And that's why you have this outpouring on May the 9th. And I think that there is still hope for Malaysia. Although at moments it looks very dark and looks very impossible. But I think the lesson is we must keep hopes alive.
Now, that's at the macro level, right? But what's in it for you personally, though? Because we have got a question here from a listener, you know, asking, well, why didn't you want to take up a position in cabinet? For career politicians, they see this as goal, right? This is the crowning moment of your political career. But at the 11th hour, you decided to step away. Why was that?
No, I think that there are enough talented and idealistic leaders in the DAP in Pakatan Harapan to fill the cabinet positions, and I think they should be given an opportunity to do so. I will have other roles, and what other roles, time will tell. I'm not giving up. I think we must continue in this struggle to make Malaysia a better place.
So you're still unsure as to your role in the Pakatan coalition right now?
We'll see how it is.
Oh, okay. That's interesting to note. But then, you know, again, so for you personally then, what would you like, or what role would you like to have? Because you are Iskandar Puteri MP, you are DAP advisor. Would that be enough?
I'll be able to, where I can continue to contribute to the building of a better, of a new Malaysia. And this is, we are starting anew to reset the nation building policies and directions. We are trying to undo many of the things that we have gone wrong in the last 6 decades. And that is a formidable task.
Some say that perhaps your decision was based on some health concerns. How do you address that?
So far, health-wise, it's okay.
It's okay?
It's okay.
All right. Well, good to know. Now, let's get your analysis on G14 here. What do you think was the primary reason for the way GE14 panned out? Do you think it was more of an anti-BN or an ABU, anyone but UMNO fervor that was evident among voters? Or was it a vote for Pakatan in itself? Now, granted, the net result is the same, but I want to get your analysis of the underlying force for what actually happened on May 9th.
I think there is an underestimation of the intelligence of the people. There is this conspiracy of silence over 3 years, over the one MDB scandal, where Malaysia became a kleptocratic, a global kleptocracy. And there is a belief that it is possible to cordon off Malaysians from this global consciousness and knowledge that of the kleptocratic direction we have moved. And I think the elections have shown that while it is possible to control the printed and even some electronic mass media, it is not possible to completely wall off Malaysians from the information age, where information travels at the speed of light. And that's not possible. And there is a need for governments to be truthful, to be transparent, and not to have this major facade that the one MDB scandal exists all over the world, but not in Malaysia.
Right. Now, there's a very strong narrative out there that Pakatan's win was down to the Tun Mahathir factor, Tunforia, as I like to call it. Is that a fair assessment then, or is it primarily due to the factors that you outlined just now, the handling of one MDB, the suffocation of local media, etc.?
Many factors were involved. You know, no one factor. There's no doubt that Mahathir factor is an important one, but there are many other factors. The question, I think, for the first time that you have this now or never moment, that the awareness of this, if you don't do it this time, the future will be very difficult to bring about change. But there is no doubt that the Mahathir factor is an important one.
Talk to us about that meeting you had with Tun M on, I believe, April 1st, 2016, according to media reports, you know, because it was a 180, right, as to your relationship now with the Prime Minister versus, you know, what has transpired in decades past. I mean, this is a man who called for an end to your political career just as recent as GE13. So how do you reconcile the past with the present?
Well, I think we are all going through ups and downs and many hard experiences. I had differences with Dr. Mate, but we must not allow these differences of the past, what happened in the past, to cloud the future. And we must learn from the past so that we can build a better future for all. And I think Dr. Mate is the best example, where he's learning also from his experiences of the past to build a better Malaysia future.
You use the word differences, and some might say that that's an understatement of sorts, right? And critics say that perhaps this relationship is based on political expediency more so than principles. How do you respond?
Build on political expediency for a common future. On principles, we have not, as far as DAP is concerned, we have not compromised any of our principles, any of our objectives, and we continue to forge in that direction. So it's a question of, it will be a very challenging, a very Herculean challenge, but I think with a goodwill, with a trust, with a common objective to build a better Malaysia, I think we should be able to cooperate and succeed.
So that future goal, the present political realities, that is enough for us to perhaps, like you said, put aside the past alleged transgressions. Am I getting that right?
We must learn from the past. We must learn from the mistakes and the differences of the past to build a better future.
All right, we got to take a quick break, YB, and when we come back, we'll talk about the strength of the new coalition, well, the coalition that's now helming the new federal government. I'm speaking to YB Lim Kit Siang. This is The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned.
You are listening to The BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Breakfast Grill. I am Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio, we have the pleasure of having YB Lim Kit Siang, DAP advisor and also Iskandar Puteri MP, and one of the longest serving MPs here in Malaysia. YB, you're very active on social media. You have your blog, which has a tremendous following. Now, I want to draw your attention to a blog, or rather a reposting that you did back in 2016. You reposted an article by Diana Sofia, and she quotes Soviet dictator Stalin, and I want to just read this out, and I quote, "It is not so difficult to keep unity in time of war, since there is a joint aim to defeat the common enemy, which is clear to everyone. The difficult task will come after the war, with diverse interests, which will tend to divide the allies." End quote. So how relevant is that call to Pakatan today? Now that you have control of the federal government, that common enemy, UMNO, BN, is out of the picture, at least for the next 5 years. How imperative is it for Pakatan to remain united and strong moving forward?
I think the analysis is very correct. And there's something for all components in the Pakatan Harapan to bear in mind, that having succeeded in unseating UMNO and Barisan Nasional, it is important that you should not allow differences that we are bound to have, different viewpoints, different mindsets, to reach a stage whereby the whole thing will collapse. And that's why, although there is the view that such a very motley gathering cannot last, I think, on the other hand, that the you need not be so pessimistic, because just as it is not possible for anybody to think that we will have won in the on May the 9th, there's no reason why we should not succeed. Bearing in mind that we must never reach allow our differences to reach a point where we disintegrate and we fail. That we come together with one objective to rebuild Malaysia, and that's something which cannot be achieved in 5 years or even 10 years. That the longer goals to bring about institutional, structural changes and mindset changes as well.
But in your view, in your assessment right now, what is a tie that binds Pakatan right now? Is it personalities or is it principles?
I think both. I think the personalities that we had the experience of working together in Pakatan Harapan, although it's a very short period, and in the coming 5 years, I think we will have more time to work together to iron out our differences that we have, undoubtedly, and as well as the we want to reset nation building policy and directions to go back to what we have our Malaysian dream.
Now I hear you. Mentioned this call about saving Malaysia and rebuilding Malaysia multiple times now, but that is a very broad umbrella, right? It's about how you go about what kind of policies that you actually implement. So some component parties are perhaps of a more ethnic religious identity. They see that as the imperative, whereas DAP, PKR might have a more socialist Democrat stance to it. So what, I mean, simply put, what would DAP have in common with, say, PPBM, with the Amanas, you know, of this world?
I think there must be an overall umbrella. I think that there are three things you must do. We have that three historic events that must take place. The first one was already on the May the 9th when we unexpectedly, even the world set up to see that we can become an example of a country that can bring about peaceful and democratic change despite great odds. But then that is not enough. We must be able to demonstrate that we make history. Otherwise, we become history. We must be able to fulfill the hopes and aspirations of the people, which is to more democracy, more freedom, and have a better life. And this is something that we must achieve in our first term. But even more important is we must be able to demonstrate to the world that we can turn back the path towards a global kleptocracy. You can become from a global kleptocracy to become a leading nation of integrity. So I think this agenda is a common agenda that can bind the component parties together.
What about hopes and aspirations in terms of the racially based politics that we have been so accustomed to in, you know, well, pretty much for all, much of Malaysian life?
Another important component must be the building of a united Malaysian nation. And what I would call the Malaysian dream, whereby a nation of diverse races, languages, cultures can come together to become a what the Tunku Abdul Rahman said in 1957, a beacon of light in a troubled and difficult world. And we have never been a beacon of light. And just time to become a beacon of light.
Now, Anu, I'll continue in that train of thought then, because just yesterday you've got media reports quoting Johor DAP chief Liu Chin Tong calling for Bersatu, PPBM, to be multiracial. Do you echo that call?
I would say that in this elections, all Malaysians, regardless of race, whether Malays, Chinese, Indians, and Kadazans or Ibans, have demonstrated they are capable of rising above their ethnic selves to become more Malaysian-minded. And I think this is something to build on. And it's a direction that I think we must... This is a Malaysian dream. This is what we aimed and hoped for when we achieved Merdeka in 1957 and formed Malaysia in 1963. So it is a direction that we must move towards too.
So should PPBM open direct membership to non-Bumis as well?
Well, this is the future that they should be moving on. When and where, that's up to the time that the PPBM will have to decide.
Right. And what about for DAP then? Because, you know, it is seen by some quarters as a Chinese-centric party. What does that mean for your membership then, in keeping with the values that you espoused earlier, you know, this future Malaysia?
The DAP has started us as a Malaysian-centric party. Although, of course, we are accused of being anti-Malay, anti-Islam. Suddenly, I am accused as the greatest demon in the country. Although, yesterday, suddenly, I found myself being described as the statesman. but we are fully conscious of this. We are completely conscious of this. And that's why throughout the history of the DAP, from the first general elections that we contested in 1969 until now, we have always Malay candidates and as assemblymen, members of parliament, and now we have Malay state escorts, and it is a direction, it's a work in progress. We must continue to work in the direction whereby all Malaysians regard themselves as Malaysians first.
But is DAP ramping up its recruitment of non-Chinese members in keeping with those optics? To be seen not as a Chinese...
You do not seem to be aware in 1969. half a century ago, we have more Indian MPs than MIC. So the question of Chinese or non-Chinese doesn't arise. It's the Malaysian.
Right. Sure, and a fair point. I'm just raising questions that have come in from our listeners there. And in keeping with this racial theme here, we have got a question from a listener in Puchong, can't quite get the name here, asking about, well, again, going back to this optics of how the various component parties in Pakatan are seen. According to Sentil Naden, and I was saying that you've got Bersatu representing Malays. According to him, DAP representing Chinese, so that narrative is still out there. So he's asking, do Indians need a sole party to represent them in this new Malaysia?
The DAP doesn't represent the Chinese. The DAP has always represented all Malaysians. And I think that is a wrong perception. And I think as far as the Pakatan Harapan is concerned, it must be a coalition which serves the interests of all Malaysians and not of any ethnic entity.
I also want to get your comments on media reports again just yesterday. This time it's from Amanah President Mat Sabu, who didn't rule out the push for amendments to the Sharia Courts Criminal Jurisdiction Act 1965 or ACTA 355. You know, he didn't really rule it out. He said this is something that they will talk about at the party level and consider whether it's an agenda that they want to pursue. From your stance as a DAP advisor, are you worried that ACTA 355 could rear its head and perhaps weaken the Pakatan coalition, especially now when you are tasked with leading Malaysia at the federal government level?
I do not want to go into specifics, but there's no doubt that there are certain aspects of political realities you must be aware of. And Malaysia is a diverse nation of different religions, cultures, and Islam as a political reality. But of course, I think if Malaysia should be an example to the world of a multi-religious nation, whereby there is harmony, there is unity, and I think that what is important are the values that Islam can bring to such a process. 1,400 years ago, Islam was a leading reform movement. It is important are the values rather than the structures. And I think that's important how Malaysia can become an example to the world.
Are there already discussions within the Pakatan ranks to preempt this risk?
No, I don't know. As I said, I don't go into specifics. And just only a few days. 2 weeks of government.
Yeah, two and a half weeks.
These are thoughts that will be in our mind.
All right. Now, help me understand this dilemma here. Because on one hand, you espouse virtues like this is a Malaysia that looks beyond racial identities, right? Yet at the same time, there's plenty of clamor for racial, ethnic, gender representation at the cabinet level here. It appears to be two opposing storylines. How do you make sense of them both?
That's why it's a question of how you can create unity out of all these complexities and contradictions. So it is not an easier task, but nonetheless, it has to be accomplished.
So is racial representation at the cabinet level important?
No, I think the question of ethnic, religious, gender, and all that will have to be taken into account, but they should not be the primary consideration.
Now, there's also criticisms against the Pakatan Coalition about failing to maintain that 30% representation for women at the cabinet level. Now, granted, big caveat here, it's, like you said, only 2.5 weeks into the new federal government. The new cabinet hasn't been lined up yet. But is there enough will to make sure that 30% goal is met?
I think the criticism... The new government must be prepared to listen to criticisms and that's on that specific issue, and as well as others. But the new cabinet hasn't been formed yet. The full cabinet hasn't been formed yet. So I think one should be more patient.
All right, we're coming up to the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin with Keith Kam standing by. And after that, we'll be back with more with YB Lim Kit Siang, DAP advisor and Iskandar Putri MP. You're tuned in to The Breakfast Grill right here on BFM 89.9. Stay tuned.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying with us on the Extended Breakfast Grill this morning. I'm Tan Chung Han, and with me in the studio is YB Lim Kit Siang, DAP advisor, Iskandar Puteri MP, and also one of the longest serving MPs here in Malaysia. Now, YB, I want to get your thoughts about something very significant and perhaps thorny for DAP in the lead up to GE14. You've got all the Pakatan component parties choosing to run under the PKR flag, and you having to give up the Rocket logo, you know, a banner under which you have campaigned since the since the 1960s. You know, recount for us that negotiation process.
There was not so much a negotiation, but the question is whether the DAP was prepared to forgo the Rocket symbol and use a common symbol for all parties. And it was a heart-wrenching decision because for half a century, party leaders and activists have sacrificed and campaigned and sacrificed for the Rocket. And it is very close to our heart. But we felt that for the interest of sending a message that this 14th general election is not for any individual candidate, not for any particular party, but to save the nation, that it must rise above personalities, even political parties, that we want to reach out to UMNO and past members that this is a time they must come forward to join in this campaign to save Malaysia. We felt that it was necessary to forgo the Rocket symbol and to use a common symbol for all the Pakatan Harapan candidates. If the Pakatan Harapan had been registered, it would be easier. There would be a different, but then there would be a problem also because they have the shortness of time, how to get everybody to recognize and to the new logo. But in any event, we decided on the PKR's eye symbol, and that was the background.
Well, to many observers, that implies that DAP was subservient to, you know, a higher force, right, in within the Pakatan ranks. So how do you undo that damage, right? And, you know, how do you even try to bring back the DAP logo moving forward?
The DAP is not subservient to any other political party. It was subservient to the national goal, to the larger national objective. And I think that it was one of the game changers in the 14th general elections. The DAP and the Rocket is inseparable. It is something which will be continue to be identified. We are not going to forgo the Rocket. But if the Pakatan Harapan, now it is registered, will have a common symbol, then in the future general elections, it will be a common symbol of the Pakatan Harapan.
But you still described it as heart-wrenching then, right? Still heart-wrenching?
Yes, it was heart-wrenching. In fact, some of the leaders shed tears over it. But they felt it was necessary to make that sacrifice. It was a sacrifice for the larger national interests, not because we were subordinate to any other political party.
And this was purely Tun M's call?
Yes, this is I think it's a game changer. I think he was able to, and from there, it was to demonstrate that it is time for all Malaysians to make sacrifices for the larger national good.
Right. So again, given Tun M's influence within the Pakatan ranks, right, it does beg question about, you know, what happens 2 years from now when he, if he decides to step away, right? Then what's going to happen to the makeup, or if you will, the hierarchy within Pakatan post Tun M era? Now, granted, there's Dato' Sri Anwar waiting in the wings, but then beyond that, you know, what happens to this personality-driven glue that holds Pakatan together?
Well, Anwar Ibrahim will become the 8th Prime Minister of Malaysia, taking over from Dr. Mahathir. But I think the coalition that has come together in Pakatan Harapan will continue. I don't see why there should be any changes. So long as we are prepared to make the 14th general election, the promises that we gave to the people of Malaysia, we deliver them.
Now, you've been quoted before saying, you know, and I quote, "I have never hated Mahathir. It's nothing personal. It's just work." So all that we're hearing from you right now, is it just work?
In fact, I've never been very personal with Najib, even. Although now we have succeeded in I'm sitting, Najib. There's nothing, as far as I'm concerned, there's nothing personal in politics. We must be always be prepared to see issues rather than on personalities.
And so some say that is a dangerous precedent that has been set by Pakatan with Tun Emrah, because, you know, you yourself, you have brought to light many of the alleged transgressions made during his administration, yet were able to just welcome him with open arms when he joined Pakatan's ranks. So is that a dangerous precedent to be set, or whereby, you know, future, and I'm using air quotes here, political enemies all can be forgiven if they just join your cause?
I think we are setting a great precedent, a great example where we must prepare to forgo our differences and for a common good. And this is not just for an unprincipled position, a common good for the country, for the future. And there is no doubt that if Dr. Mahathir can undo all the wrongs and save Malaysia from the rot that we have gone into, because heading towards a kleptocracy, a failed state and a rogue state, I think there will be a greater legacy that you will have left behind.
I'm trying to ascertain that line then, because, you know, by that principle, if I'm going to stick to the letter of it, then, and indulge me here, if Dato Sri Najib wants to just cross over as well, then by that same principle, all is forgiven?
No, not question of forgiven. He has to pay for his wrongs and his sins, and undoubtedly he has committed one of the greatest sins for any Malaysian leader, which is to take Malaysia towards a direction of a global kleptocracy. But there's nothing personal in it. It's just you must pay for what you have done, and that applies for all.
So has or will Tun Dr. Mahathir pay for what he's allegedly done?
Well, I think The very fact that he has prepared to work with the DAP and shows that he's aware that not everything in the past were beautiful in and unspotted.
Now, with the little time that we have left, I also want to get the DAP stance on former Kepong MP Tan Seng Yeow. Now, he was an 8-term Kepong MP, but was dropped for GE14. I haven't really quite, at least according to media reports, haven't really gotten a sense as to the rationale for why he was dropped. Can you shed some light on that?
I don't think it's worth making any comment.
And why not?
It's not worth
because it's a long time DAP.
Well,
servant.
I think.
Well, was it because
the events speak for themselves? There's no need for me to add to it.
So was it because he didn't, as some claim, he didn't toe the party line when it came to the 1MDB narrative?
I think the public can make a judgment. It's not worth making any comment.
I understand. Well, with the little time that we have left, then let's get your outlook on this new Malaysia, or Malaysia Baharu, as many have spoken about. What is the what is the broader goal here? And what is your message for Malaysian voters? How do we navigate this new administration? And also your message to those who's helming the federal government right now.
How Malaysia can become a beacon of light in a difficult and troubled world. And we want to have a thriving democracy. In other words, there are checks and balances within the government, in the opposition, constructive and creative opposition, the mass media, the civil society. And in this context, I'm prepared to give free tuition to UMNO and MCA how to be a constructive and effective opposition.
Free tuition, yeah, based on, 50 years of experience,
yes.
Right? Well, are you going to charge for that, though, or is it going to be free tuition?
I can give them free tuition. But if they don't pay me, I won't stop them.
Can they take out PTPTN loans for those?
Pardon?
Can they take out PTPTN loans for those? No?
Well.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you so much for your time and your insights there. I've been speaking to YB Lim Kit Siang, DAP advisor, and Iskandar Putri. You've been tuning into The Breakfast Grill right here on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
That episode of BFM Breakfast Grill was brought to you by U Mobile, where data hearts you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.